On this episode of The Big Number, we react to the Dallas Mavericks firing Nico Harrison as their general manager in the wake of the shocking Luka trade and a disastrous 3-7 start to the season. Do the Mavs have any hope in improving their offense this season? And is it time to blow up the Dallas roster and go all in on Cooper Flagg? Plus, why the changes to the 2026 NBA All-Star game might not actually improve the product, but we're cautiously optimistic. All this coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, and as always, we are joined by your man, my man, our man, Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on, man?
Well, Tom, I had a lovely time with my children at the Radio City Christmas Spectacular, watching the Rockettes do a lot of kicking. While I was on the way there, though, a bigger kick in the NBA world happened as Nico Harrison has been kicked out of Dallas and maybe out of polite society for a while. Kind of remains to be seen what's going on, but I'm guessing that's where we're going today, so hit me with it. What is this week's big number, Tom?
Yeah, it is Nico related. So we're going to go with this one. This week's big number is zero. That's the number of games that Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis played and finished together since the Luka trade. Zero. Dan, zero. They literally did not play a full game together before Patrick Dumont, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, decided, I'm not waiting any longer. I am getting rid of Nico Harrison, who executed this trade 9 months ago. And they never got to see the vision, Dan. Dan, Nico Harrison's vision that we kept hearing about after they drafted or they lucked into Cooper Flagg, the number one overall pick. Talk about the vision of this team and this process that Nico Harrison had designed in his lab. Of winning the lottery, one of the most unlucky, the luckiest lottery winners ever in NBA history. It was all part of the plan. He was light years ahead of everybody. And at some point, we were going to see Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis play together and see his vision, but not under Nico Harrison's watch because he got let go on Tuesday. And Shams Charania and ESPN had the gall to report the exact time that Nico Harrison was going to get let go. And so you were at the Rockettes. What was your initial reaction to this? Cause I figured they would wait until AD came back and Kyrie Irving would come back and they could give at least Nico Harrison a shot at vindicating himself in this trade, but zero. We never saw them play together and finish a game together because obviously Kyrie Irving had the ACL injury in March of last season, and AD had the adductor groin issues. He was in and out of the lineup, and the one game that they did play together, AD left early in the third quarter. So if you remember that one, that was an awesome AD game, but we hardly knew ye, Kyrie Irving, Nico, and AD. We never got to see a full game from them. And yet, here we are on Wednesday recording this. But what was your initial reaction while you're watching the Rockettes?
Well, I was thinking, like, this had to happen. I think everybody, the long tail of the Luka Doncic for Anthony Davis trade was never going to bend in the direction of Nico Harrison being right. Like, respectfully to whatever the vision may have been, there was just no way you were going to wind up with like commensurate value for a 25-year-old five-time All-NBA first team selection on the back end of it. And saying like our competitive window is the next 3 to 4 years, and then immediately dealing with injuries to two of the two central pieces of that vision. And so the toxicity surrounding it, obviously last season there was, you know, like demonstrations outside of the Mavericks arena where fans are calling for Harrison's head. There were so many, you know, fire Nico chants towards the back end of last season. They bubbled up again the beginning of this season. It reached a peak where over the weekend you're hearing reports from guys like Mark Stein and Tim McMahon, I got my ESPN Mick guys mixed up. Tim McMahon talking about
mixed up?
Yes, exactly. That's right. My apologies to both of them. That the like the patience was wearing thin. The seat was getting hot. 3-7 start. One of the, you know, like you were the only team that the Wizards had beat. You know, like you had these ugly performances. It wasn't looking good. And to move with that through a loss to the Bucks, where you were ahead, you fall back behind, and at the free throw line, when PJ Washington has 3 free throws to potentially tie the game or win the game, fire Nico chants are happening during that. It is Cooper Flagg's best game as a pro. You are taking Giannis, like MVP level Giannis Antetokounmpo, down to the wire. And the fans are still so rabid and ravenous that in the middle of those free throws, they're chanting fire Nico. Like there's no coming back from it. And so then to come out of it at 3-8 with the worst offense in the NBA, with no point guard, with Anthony Davis still hurt, with apparently reportedly like arguments over when Anthony Davis can come back, and like Nico Harrison and AD maybe pushing for him to come back faster. It seemed like there was just a complete lack of trust, a breakdown of any sort of faith that ownership had that Harrison was going to make the right decisions. And if that's the case, then don't wait 3 months, don't wait 6 months, don't wait till the offseason to do it. If you don't trust that this person's going to do what's right for the organization or can make the best out of what's the situation now is on hand, then you got to do it today. If like that sort of famous old quote, like that which will be done eventually had best be done immediately, like this is what it is. So
yeah,
I was like dramatically not stunned to the point where I spent like my entire Monday writing like a 1500 word column about the Nico Harrison thing, and I was about to end. I just didn't know it was going to be the next day. I think the massive questions here are like, all right, so now what? And that will be what the Mavericks, you know, their co-interim front office and Patrick Dumont and Mavericks fans will have to start picking through over the weeks and months ahead.
Yeah, Dan, a little peek behind the curtain as someone in the media, and we've been doing this for quite a long time, is you kind of have to pre-write obits sometimes. Is when people get to a certain age, there's this thing that we do is we pre-write an obit, so in case something happens, it's ready to go. And with Nico Harrison, I think in my head, I was pre-writing the obit on Nico Harrison's era in Dallas, because when the news came, I wrote on it and it like spilled out of me a column in like 10 minutes. And I remember being like, I posted it and someone said to me on social media, wow, looks like you had this in the chamber, huh? Like kind of a annoying remark, right? And literally I had a blank canvas and then had a full column like that. And it was like, I think a lot of us had been expecting this or thinking about this for a very long time, Dan. I wrote for Yahoo Sports, 5 candidates to replace Nico Harrison. And one was Bob Myers, the former Golden State Warriors exec, president of basketball operations and general manager, won 4 titles with them and is now with Joshua Harris's sports empire in Philadelphia. He's an executive there. He's still an NBA free agent. He's not technically running the show for the 76ers, even though he's part of like the parent organization. There's also Grant Hill, born in Dallas, head of USA Basketball. He's part owner of the Atlanta Hawks and vice chairman of the Atlanta Hawks. So you'd obviously have to, rescind all of those responsibilities with the Hawks if he was to join the Dallas Mavericks. But I think being that Duke, the face of Duke basketball, along with Coach K, and then you got Cooper Flagg, I feel like that could be a good fit. You got also David Griffin, who won a championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Also worked for Rick Welts. Rick Welts is the CEO from Golden State, who is now the CEO of Dallas, that you see a lot oftentimes sitting next to Patrick Dumont courtside. He was also working with Bob Myers in Golden State. And Steve Nash, Dirk Nowitzki, played for Dallas, and Steve Nash was a player during the 7 seconds or less Suns with Mike D'Antoni, and Rick Welts was with the Phoenix Suns there along with David Griffin. So there's a lot of Rick Welts kind of 5 degrees of Kevin Bacon, 5 degrees of Rick Welts, the CEO of Dallas, who also worked for the league office and also worked for the Seattle Supersonics, a Hall of Famer, Rick Welts. So it's kind of why I went in those directions. Then, of course, there's also the big bombshell hire, which would be Anthony Davis's agent, Rich Paul, who is also Derek Lively, his agent there at Clutch Sports. And we've seen a lot of guys like Leon Rose, Arne Tellem, Bob Myers, go from agent Rob Pelinka, the guy who acquired Luka Doncic in the trade, also an agent turned executive. So I think that's not totally out of the question. Of course, Dallas has to figure out, like, does that timeline work anymore? Is the AD timeline? Or is it Cooper Flagg's team, right, Dan? So that is really, you had a great kicker in your story that you wrote for Yahoo Sports where you finished with that quote from Nico Harrison. He fits our timeline. He's talking about AD, Nico Harrison is. If you pair him with Kyrie and the rest of the guys, he fits right along with our timeline to win now and win in the future. And the future to me is 3-4 years from now. The future 10 years from now, I don't know. We'll probably bury me and kid by then, or we'll bury ourselves. Yikes, Dan. Yikes.
Yeah. He was thinking about what would happen in 10 years, and he didn't make it 10 months from that comment, which is wild. But also wildly foreseeable. I think obviously Luka immediately getting into shape and then ripping off, like, he's leading the league in scoring. He's averaging 37-9-9 on like career best shooting efficiency. The Lakers are 8-3. The Mavs are 3-8 and can't score. Like, these things, I think, were foreseeable to some degree. It's also about like the worst case scenario for Nico Harrison's vision of, the guys that I wanted to build this whole thing around aren't healthy. The guy I didn't trust to get in shape and stay healthy is doing that. And
Dan, Luka played 42 of 53 possible games since the trade. He's missed 11 games. Kyrie has missed 33 games. Anthony Davis has missed 30 games. So this is like worst case scenario for Nico Harrison is saying Luka, he didn't say this, right? He didn't say that Luka is an injury risk that we were not willing to tolerate going forward and projecting him with the supermax, which was really scary and complicated and tricky. He said, wasn't totally sure if the reports were that they weren't totally sure they wanted to give him that max extension. And it all kind of fell apart. But that's what happens when you trade a 25-year-old in his prime for guys that are, you know, Anthony Davis, who was 31 at the time of the trade, Kyrie Irving was 32 at the time of the trade. What did you think was going to happen, right, Dan? So, like, if you're taking over for Nico Harrison and you got Cooper Flagg, and I to this day, I think Cooper Flagg, even though Nico was celebrating in the draft war room, and that was like a really cool moment for the Mavericks franchise, getting Cooper Flagg to fall from the sky and in their lap, I think it almost accelerated their timeline for Nico, like accelerated Nico's firing timeline, because I think now Patrick Dumont can look at the marketplace and say, oh, we can get a guy like Bob Myers now. Why would Bob Myers take this job beforehand? But now you got Cooper Flagg. Like, you better make sure that Nico Harrison's the right guy. If there are people like, you know, Grant Hill, I'm not saying they are, but I'm writing about how Bob Myers could feasibly realistically take this job now because they got Cooper Flagg, the 18-year-old from Duke, the phenom from Duke. Before then, I don't think you're putting Bob Myers and saying, yeah, that's a really good job opportunity for him. But now, Patrick Dumont did the math, and I think the math is here too. Dan, the attendance stuff, did you know this attendance stuff that they had failed to sell out for the first time in 20 years recently in this season? So, like, I feel like that's a pretext for Patrick Dumont, a way to rationalize a business reason, publicly known business reason why Nico Harrison needed to go, was over the last three home games, they failed to sell out. Dan, they have Cooper Flagg. They have Cooper Flagg, and they were not able to sell out games. Think about that. You know, like, how bad would it have been in terms of the attendance and how empty the bowls would be if they didn't have number 32 for Dallas? Like, would it be empty? Would the stands be empty if it weren't for Cooper Flagg? That's how bad it was that they failed to sell out for the first time in 20 years and they had Cooper.
Yeah, I think you're looking at a rupture that was like really goes like bone deep with that fan base. And, you know, you can understand why. It's like, it's not just that you traded away a really good player. It's that this was like homegrown, our guy, everybody loved it. And we talked about this for months and months and months. It got to the place where like Dirk Nowitzki is not involved with the franchise anymore, right? Like, this didn't cost you one franchise icon, it cost you two. The central figures in the last 25 years of Dallas Mavericks basketball, every success, every, you know, moment of triumph was oriented around those guys. And like, the idea being like, if you're in a hole, the first step to getting out of it is stop digging. That's all that happened here. It is just, we are moving on from, we're trying to put a period at the end of the sentence of this like traumatic period in our organization's history. This was a mistake from the moment it was conceived. It was a mistake from the moment it was executed. All we can do, and we can't undo that mistake. There's no, you know, edit undo on this. All we can do is say the person responsible for that, we're going to hang it on one person, fairly or unfairly. I mean, Patrick Dumont had to say yes to this, but we're going to say the person who came up with this idea, who constructed it, this person is gone. Now, we go about the business of repairing the trust that we have ruptured, and we move from here. And so I think the, you know, the candidates you mentioned are really interesting for a number of reasons. I did note, I have my eyebrow kind of like people's eyebrow arched up at the end of, I believe it was Mark Stein, who said, like, just so we know, Rich Paul has a really good relationship with Patrick Dumont. I was like, interesting. Oh, yeah. Interesting, yeah. To note.
And that was the kicker to his piece.
I think
piece.
That from a get fans back on board and like restore some feeling, the Nash Dirk component to this makes a ton of sense. The immediate aftermath reporting from, again, Stein, McMahon, some other folks are pointing toward Dennis Lindsay, former Jazz executive who was an advisor in Dallas on the 23-24 NBA Finals team, who's now the number two to Trajan Langdon in Detroit, another, you know, Duke connection there through Trajan Langdon. So we'll see if that's, but I mean, that's not your big splash home run swing hire, but, you know, what remains to be seen there. I think it's worth noting that a couple of the postmortem pieces here, Chris Mannix at SI, I think Zach Lowe mentioned it on his show at The Ringer, mentioned that there had been scuttlebutt about Jason Kidd kicking upstairs. The potential that Jason Kidd might not want to be around for a rebuild as a coach and might follow in the footsteps of somebody like Brad Stevens or Pat Riley before him and go from the bench to the front office. I don't know how real that is. I think it's notable that it came up in a couple of different places right after the fact. Just keep an eye on that, I suppose. We've seen Jason Kidd sort of see an opportunity and move to it a couple times in his career. It remains to be seen. But either way, your point is exactly right. It's like a head coach opening. You look for who the quarterback is. Do you have a starting quarterback that you can build around and win with? Cooper Flagg represents that opportunity, at least for Dallas, something to build around, something to hang your hat on as a starting point. You'd imagine that would entice some top level talent. There's also a pretty significant hole to still climb out of, even if you stopped digging. So where this goes from here is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, whoever takes over, I certainly would hope have Nikola Jokic a tier above Drew Holiday. This report from Tib Cato at Dallas
Wow.
Media Network. Quote, one team source recalls a document where Harrison placed Drew Holiday within the same trade target tier as Nikola Jokic.
Okay.
That's a real sentence that was printed.
I mean, Drew Holiday rules, you know, no arguments here vis-a-vis Drew Holiday ruling, but some arguments may be about tears.
Yeah, I work on the Blazers broadcast, so like I have to say here, Drew Holiday is excellent, awesome.
Yes,
right. But I'll just point out, Drew Holiday has never gotten a single MVP vote in his career, and Jokic has a couple awards.
Oh, okay.
A few. So,
oh, right, right,
right. So it's like no hate on Drew Holiday, but I kind of feel like when you're seeing that document and Nikola Jokic is on it and they're right next to him is Drew Holiday. It's not just about the Luka trade, I guess, is the larger point. It's
right.
The vision. It's the fact that Jason Kidd refused to start D'Angelo Russell and then put him into the starting line and bailed. And it's just no one was aligned. And that's why I just think the Jason Kidd thing, Dan, quickly on this. I think if you are letting go Nico Harrison, this is an opportunity to just go from a clean slate. Go clean slate.
Sure.
And it just seems like when Nico Harrison, after the trade, is sitting there being like, hey, I made the trade, but this guy supported it too. Jason Kidd. I remember Jason Kidd probably was like, really? You're doing this to me, bro? Like, that's what he did. Nico was like trying to get Jason Kidd still. Like, he put Jason Kidd on the stage next to him to answer questions about a trade he made, right? So it's just, I don't know. There's so much we can talk about, which we got to. Okay, zero is the big number this week. It's the number of games that Kyrie Irving and AD finished together as a Dallas Maverick since the Luka Doncic trade. We've got more to talk to you about, talk about with this trade coming up after the break. And just a reminder, it right now in the Yahoo Fantasy app, you can draft a new league in Yahoo's newest fantasy basketball format, High Score. It's clean, simplified, a brand new format where you can draft 10 players, start six, and set your lineup only once per week. High Score takes your starter's best single games from the week as you go head-to-head against one of your league mates. The NBA season is still early. We haven't even had Thanksgiving here. So draft a team on High Score today in the Yahoo Fantasy app or at yahoofantasy.com. All right, Dan, reminder, this week's big number is zero. That's the number of games that Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis started and finished together as a member of the Dallas Mavericks since the Luka Doncic trade. Not great, Bob. Not great, Bob. Dan, let's drill down even further on the big news this week. Nico Harrison is out as the Dallas Mavericks general manager. What's your first little number here?
Yeah, get ready for some more pain, everybody. Our first little number is 111.4. 111.4. That is how many points per 100 possessions the Mavericks have scored in 45 total games since the Luka Doncic trade. That is 25th in the NBA in that span going back to the trade deadline last season, or before the trade deadline last season, ahead of only the Utah Jazz, New Orleans Pelicans, Brooklyn Nets, Washington Wizards, and Charlotte Hornets. Not the neighborhood you want to be in with respect to putting a strong offensive product
on the court. Not even the same time zone you want to be in, right? Like, you don't even... No. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, okay, keep going.
They're in an alternate dimension of offensive effectiveness, and you want to be far, far away from there as opposed to trapped in the phantom zone. This season, so just this season, the Mavericks rank 30th in points scored per possession, 30th in half-court scoring efficiency, 30th in three-pointers per game, 30th in team three-point accuracy, 28th in offensive rebounding rate, 27th in assists, 28th in points created by assist, 26th in team field goal percentage, and 25th in assist-to-turnover ratio. So they're bad at generating points in the half-court. They're bad at generating points altogether. They don't share the ball super great, and they don't make a lot of threes. At the risk of drawing the kind of too simple outline of what's missing in the middle of this team, it looks a lot like Luka Doncic for what stuff doesn't work that used to work. And also Kyrie Irving, and which in fairness, that was part of the vision, right? That said, I think when Kyrie got hurt, everybody knew he wasn't going to be back very quickly. And you had an opportunity, you had many opportunities to bring in ball handlers, shooters, point, whatever. And the answer was just D'Angelo Russell and give Cooper Flagg the ball. And that has not worked out super hot. So setting aside the idea that like, it's just all, you know, this is about to be blown up. Do you have any hope that this could go from like the worst offense in the NBA to something even approaching passable if some of the guys get back healthy?
Dennis Schroeder, two words. Dennis Schroeder. How do we make this happen, Dan? How do we make this happen?
Call the bullpen. Go get him.
Yeah. Let's bring him in. What's his
Sacramento open for business? Right. Yeah.
Is Duhas German? I feel like Rammstein is German. Do we get that?
I think you're right. I was going to say Rammstein. just remember that, like that one. 9 was the way that like the breakdown of that song happens, and just like in the middle of it, like what better represents the Dallas Mavericks offense than no, you know, yeah, that's where we are with the Dallas Mavericks right now.
I say this jokingly, but also there's a serviceable point guard that if you need just replacement level, as we talked about, and like that last week's little number is that he's a serviceable point guard, a ball handler that you could trust to run the offense with Cooper Flagg, Anthony Davis, PJ Washington, and some lob threats and Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively. Outside of that, I don't think you're going to be able to have an above average offense with this team without Kyrie Irving. We know that Jason Kidd as the head coach does not trust D'Angelo Russell. I think they overlapped while he was with the Lakers. And so it is very telling that Nico Harrison thought this was a good idea and Jason Kidd does not trust him with the credibility of starting for the team and setting the table. So that's a big red flag. And then secondly, the idea of just giving Cooper Flagg the ball and saying, go to work, 18-year-old against NBA defenses, just seems like Jason Kidd was trying to get Nico fired. Like, it seems like Jason Kidd was like, you want me to play D'Angelo Russell to run this offense? I'm not going to do it. So why don't we just hand the ball over to Cooper Flagg? And now that we know that Nico Harrison was fired and Patrick Dumont had been thinking about this, I'm just saying, like, it can't have been the optimal decision here to just hand the ball over to Cooper Flagg and just say, play through your mistakes again. He's 18, Dan. Like, right. He's like LeBron James, even as good as he was as a point guard, he was at least a point guard at St. Vincent St. Mary's. Like, he was the primary ball handler. Cooper Flagg had never been a point guard. Like, he's not a point guard. And so, yeah, Kevin Durant, first year, I think, under PJ Carlissimo, was like, they were just going to throw him out as a shooting guard, and let's see what happens. And it's kind of like a soft tank. Is like, hey, if we have this generational talent, we know we're going to have him for 7-8 years at least. Might as well just try some stuff and throw it against the wall, right? And see what happens. What's the worst that can happen? We can end up with another number one overall pick. You end up with Russell Westbrook over there in OKC. So I kind of feel like this was like a soft tank, soft try to get Nico out move, where it was just, I'm not going to play D'Angelo Russell. We're just going to throw Cooper to the wolves and see what happens. And I'm very much big fan of Cooper Flagg, but
sure,
this was not it. This was not it.
Well, I love the idea of like, it's that scene in Moneyball where it's like, if you're not going to play the team the way it's constructed, then it's not going to work. This is Jason Kidd being like, I'm playing the team you built. And, you know, we'll see how it works. And then it turned out it didn't really work. Another way to lean into a soft tank would be if, you know, your star players, your most important guys, don't play. Brings us to our second little number, 32.3%. That is the share of regular season games that Anthony Davis has missed since the end of the 2017-2018 season. That's from his last year in New Orleans through his entire tenure as a Laker, through the beginning of his time in Dallas. AD has played in 382 of a possible 564 regular season games. He has missed more than two full seasons worth of time over the past 7+ years. And that was always the problem, right? He's missing time right now. Apparently he wants to come back, but the medical team and ownership was like, let's slow down. Let's make sure, because you rushed to get on the floor when you got here and then had the muscle strain right away, and you were battling injuries the entire rest of the season. You come into this season, you know, by your own admission, sort of heavier than usual, not in the best shape, which is really funny considering what all the reporting around why Luka went out was. And then you immediately pick up a muscle injury and you're out. So the idea that this was the downside risk of Nico's gamble, you're trading a younger guy for an older guy with a lot of injury issues in his past who has missed a lot of time. You are doubling down on Kyrie, another guy on the wrong side of 30 who's missed a ton of time with injuries over the years. And then you just don't have contingencies or fail safes behind them. And so then you can say, well, Nico is sort of paying for a team where he never got to see his team. But everybody could see this is what could happen when you build the kind of team you have. And now, I mean, I guess the only faint glimmer of a silver lining is like, if that number keeps going up, if the share of regular season games missed goes up for Anthony Davis, well, then maybe your, you know, tanking position gets even stronger. But yeah, it's not a very strong glimmer of a silver lining there.
Yeah, he's missed one out of every three games, basically, what you're saying.
Basically, yeah. Since 2018.
So your timeline is 3 to 4 years, Nico Harrison suggests. But if you're not able to play like right now reliably, I think the timeline is like maybe zero. If you're trying to win a championship, look, I've written about this before this year, is the superstar trade paradox is, I think that's like the only superstar trade over the last decade, roughly, the AD trade, that it resulted in a championship. In Lakers. Like, right. Getting Anthony Davis to the Lakers was a huge success story from the standpoint of, in year one of it, they went to the bubble and they won the championship. But outside of that, man, it's a lot of mess, you know, between the KD trades in Phoenix and in Brooklyn, James Harden, Damian Lillard to the Milwaukee Bucks and what they're dealing with right now. And it's been an amazing start for Giannis. But time and time again, we see these superstar trades. They fall apart because of the lack of reliability and health. And so I think with today's NBA and the way that the NBA is playing so fast, guys like Anthony Davis, you just can't rely on them if they're already injury riddled. And then you have to ask them to play 110 possession games on a nightly basis. It's hard to see the vision. So Dan, like, if he was on an expiring contract, I could see a scenario in which the Mavericks would be like, all right, we're going to work out a buyout and we're just going to move on from this situation. Don't know how much we're going to get for you, but he's got a couple more years left on his contract, Dan, doesn't he?
Yeah, which brings us to our third little number this week, which is an especially large one, $121,243,248. That's how many dollars Anthony Davis is going to be owed for the next two seasons. So that's 26-27 and 27-28. That's not even counting the rest of this season, where he's on a $54.1 million deal this season. So after this year, still $121.2 million coming to Anthony Davis. The final year of that is a $62.8 million player option for 27-28. Maybe he's willing to rip that up because he's looking for an extension. You know, we saw, like, Kevin Durant wound up with a not like the max level deal, but it's still a big number for him. Maybe Anthony Davis has something like that. Or maybe Anthony Davis is like, I'm 34 years old. I've got this injury history. I'll just take the $63 million. Thank you very much. Remains to be seen. But either way, if you are amid the calls to blow it up, and I understand the thought process, yes, we need to align the organization with Cooper Flagg's timeline, which is he's the youngest player in the NBA, and that's the runway we need here. It's, well, the first thing you got to do is trade AD. Everybody's sort of pointing towards that, and I understand it. It makes sense. He does not make sense on a roster that's not going to be trying to contend now. I think the big question with that, though, is like, what are you going to get? What can you reasonably expect to get? How easy will it be for you to make a deal when you are, as the Mavericks are, capped at the first apron, so they can't take in more money than they send out? And when you're trying to send out not just somebody who has $54.1 million coming this season, but $121 million guaranteed for the two after that, and is going into his like 33, 34 seasons with all this time miss, I think it's going to be really difficult for them. I think we can dispense with any idea that you're going to get like commensurate value with what you sent out. You're not getting Luka back or somebody like Luka back. Not that there's very many of those guys to begin with, which was the whole problem in the first place. But if you're so thinking about like, we're going to get multiple first round picks and multiple good young players, I think it's going to be really hard to come by that sort of process. And then start thinking about the rest of the roster around. I don't know, like, where do you even start if you are co-interim general managers, Michael Finley and Matt Riccardi, or whoever would be coming in after that? Like, where do you even look to start?
Yeah. I saw that KOC had a trade proposal with the Atlanta Hawks, and I think that's where you start. But it's not for Kristaps Porzingis like KOC lined up. I think it's for Trae Young. And here's why. Trae Young is a point guard, obviously a need for at the point guard position. But he's also an expiring contract at $49 million this year. So you can kind of see the vision of like, all right, we can get off of Anthony Davis's money long term. We can also have the expiring contract and get that money clean off the books. Or if we want to extend him, we have that leverage where we are going to be able to extend that number at $50 million and have kind of an inside track in those negotiations. Or you could just like wipe your hands clean and just say, we're starting from scratch. And from the Atlanta side, you're getting a guy that can start next to Kristaps Porzingis and have that rim protection. Jalen Johnson, of course, also, they would be a huge team in that case. I just think that if you're Atlanta and you're trying to navigate, what are we doing with Trae Young going forward with Dyson Daniels and the injuries that Trae Young has, maybe you just decide with the Dallas Mavericks, like, let's, I'm not calling them damaged goods, but let's swap these situations and see what we can do. Trae Young, like, where's, like, that's the thing. When you go around the league and you try to find Ja Morant trades or Trae Young trades or Anthony Davis trades, you're like, you know what? Maybe, what is the Billy Joe Long? The loneliness, the two better, they share a drink called loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone, right?
Oh, yeah.
The idea of like these.
Okay, got it.
It's a long walk, but I got there.
It's all right.
I
like walking.
I feel like when you're talking about, hey, we can't find a trade partner for Ja Morant with Memphis or Trae Young, maybe it's just a side, these two lonely trade suitors, maybe we should just kind of make it happen with Anthony Davis or with Trae Young or with Ja Morant. So I could see Dallas with Ja Morant trade talks, or Dallas with Atlanta on trade talks. But I kind of feel like with Ja Morant, I would want to just steer clear of that from a organizational culture standpoint and try to just build around Cooper Flag and push it down like several years. So that's what I would say. There's not a lot of expiring deals that you can trade AD for. This is basically what I'm trying to say. Trae Young can be a free agent this offseason. He's not a free agent. He has a player option for next year. So we'll see what happens there. LeBron James, also an expiring contract, Dan. Speaking of Rich Paul, that is one way you could try to get off of AD's money quickly. Kevin Durant, no. So that's not going to... Not a lot of guys here is what I'm trying to say, that you can just kind of trade AD's cap number and get off his money. You're probably going to have to take some long-term money off the books. So AD, it's not easy, man. But I would say Atlanta with Trae Young is a call I would make.
It makes sense. And, you know, you're right to say, like, a lot of times is your headache more palatable for me than my current headache? And we try to figure out how to make it work around there. Solving the point guard problem, at least for the short term, would make a ton of sense. I mean, you go past that and you're saying Kyrie is owed about $82 million after this season for the next couple of years. PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford are about to start extensions that they signed this summer. They'll start after this season. You know, you've got the Caleb Martin deal, which is another like quieter bomb going off underneath the Mavericks here, is that moving Quentin Grimes to Philly and getting Caleb Martin back. And then all of a sudden, Quentin Grimes is like the kind of player who you would really love to have around, as you need more shooting and ball handling, and you don't have him anymore either. Yeah, there's a lot of contracts that are like theoretically movable, but it'll be interesting to see if they're actually able to do it and what could come back as a result of it. And getting whatever draft capital you can would be important. Brings us to our fourth little number here. The final one for the week is 37.2%. That, as of Wednesday morning, is the Mavericks' odds of landing a top four pick in the 2026 NBA draft lottery, thanks to our friends at Tankathon for running those numbers. That includes a 9% chance of picking first overall, which doesn't sound super great, but hey, they had a 1.8% chance of winning number one, and they got Cooper Flagg. So, you know, hope springs eternal. But the reason that the 2026 draft pick is hugely important is that because of the trades to build the team that got to the finals around Luka Doncic, the deals to bring in Grant Williams and then to move away from Grant Williams and bring in PJ Washington, the Gafford deal, the Kyrie deal, all these trades, you wind up not controlling your first round pick if you're the Mavericks from 2027 through 2030. So this next draft, 2026, is the last time you're going to have full control over your first round pick, no swaps, no protections, whatever, until 2031. It is supposed to be an excellent draft. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm Jonathan Givony or whatever, but like, it's by all accounts very good at the top of the draft with a handful of really high level prospects, Darren Peterson out of Kansas, AJ DeBanza, BYU, et cetera, et cetera. So this is kind of your chance, if you're trying to line yourself up on the Cooper Flag runway, to get another high ceiling prospect in the door that can grow alongside him, because you might not have a whole lot of bites at the apple moving forward. And so if that's the case, and you're just saying, like, does it make more sense to you to say we need to trade these guys now to get whatever we can out of them? Like, I don't know what the potential return would be for AD today versus in 3 months versus in the offseason. I don't know what the deal. We know Kyrie, especially coming off the ACL, hasn't played yet, whatever. PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford, whoever. do you just say, rip the Band-Aid off, get rid of them today, get whatever we can in the door because we just got to start building those coffers back up? Or do you say, hey, we kind of suck with these guys, so we just like, let's wait and see if we can maybe put ourselves in a better position down the road? Like, is it answer that question today, or is it take a deep breath? You've done the biggest thing you need to do and now figure out where to go from there.
I think you break it down to the studs, and I think Cooper Flagg is the stud by which you are building around, right? So
yeah, you're hanging everything around him, right?
Yeah, it's I think got to happen. And AD, even if he is healthy, I don't know how much he's going to move the needle without a point guard on the roster. So I'm just looking at the lottery odds and saying, yeah, everything points to me that they are going to pull the plug and tank around Cooper Flagg, who's 18 years old and still putting up pretty solid numbers, but still 18 years old. I think you can get a much better lottery position than, say, Eastern Conference teams, where they're kind of playing against each other. And the West is so, so awesome this year that it won't be too hard to end up with 20 something wins, even if you do have Cooper Flagg. And I'll just point out that graphic earlier had the Hawks with the fourth best odds because of that New Orleans Pelicans pick that Joe Dumars traded last year. I know it's crazy. I'm AD to the Pelicans. AD to the Pelicans is, you know.
Oh, that's cursed. That is absolutely cursed.
They need to win now, Dan. They don't have control over their pick. They have no incentive to tank. They need to win. Zion is out. DeJounte Murray's out. Jordan Poole is out. They need an injection of some sort of 7-foot. This is a real stat. They have the third largest block deficit in NBA history right now. They can't block shots, and they get blocked relentlessly on the other end. That's a stat for Wednesday night's game. Blazers Pelicans, by the way, that I'm going to bust out. So a little teaser there. What if you bring in Anthony Davis? You need a big man. Hey, you know what? I'm sorry, New Orleans fans. This has been painful enough this season. Bringing Anthony Davis home is not something you wanted to wake up to today. I'm just saying, man, things would be different if Joe Dumars didn't trade that pick and they would have control over their 2026 draft. They wouldn't have an incentive to like add pieces now to win. But yeah, there's no upside to losing for New Orleans. I'm just going to end it there. We got to talk about this new NBA All-Star format real quick. So, Dan, after the break, we're going to discuss something that doesn't really have much to do with Nico Harrison. But, yes, it is All-Star format season, so we're going to talk about it coming up right after the break. All right, Dan, this week's big number is zero, as in the number of games that Kyrie Irving and AD have played together. Finished, I guess I should say. Let's talk about the All-Star. The All-Star game format has changed yet again. I'll say this. I think the All-Star game died with social media. I think the All-Star game died with player empowerment. I think it's been dead for a while, is the idea that there is some sort of mystique. There's some sort of special aspect to the All-Star game. When we were growing up, it was the only time you could see them all playing together and on the same team.
Right.
They weren't hopping from team to team like they do now, getting traded or signing in free agency that LeBron James in 2010, changed the game by deciding, I'm going to decide my future, not let my team decide what my future is. I'm going to empower myself to make that decision. And it started a cascade of players, superstars, deciding where they wanted to play next and forcing trades or free agency. I think the All-Star game, Dan, is salvageable to an extent, but I think the postmortem of the All-Star starts like 5-6 years ago. Social media takes off. We can see the access to these players, their interactions. We grew up with them. There isn't this, you know, allure to the All-Star game that there was before. I don't even think East versus West is going to do it, because the problem with player empowerment is that the guys who you kind of associate with being a Western Conference guy is in the East Coast now. And the East Coast guys that you associate with being an East Coast are now on the West Coast. And so you lose some of that East versus West because of all the rotation and turnover in the league. So, Dan, let's just get to the format here. It is going to be USA versus World All-Stars, basically, which is kind of what they did last year with Team Chuck, is they were kind of soft launching this idea last year, and then they were able to kind of put it and codify it. Each team will play each other once in the round robin mini tournament, with the top two teams then advancing to face each other in the championship game. It'll be standard 12-minute period. I think that's kind of long, actually. And then in each game, the winner will be the team with the highest score after 12 minutes. There's going to be a world squad with 8 players. And if they don't meet the 8 players, then Adam Silver can add however many it needs international guys to get to the 8-person roster minimum for the international squad, so the world squad. Last year, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nikola Jokic, Giannis, Alperen Şengün, Pascal Siakam, Kyrie Irving, and Victor Wembanyama, 7 players to the world team, so they would need another one to make it this year. My third eye is open on this. I kind of feel like the voting...
Sorry. Even that, it's Kyrie, because Kyrie's born in Australia, but like Kyrie also played for Team USA, right? So there's like even that where you're like, how porous are these borders? I imagine is going to be a question as Adam Silver is making these determinations.
Right. But then, like, if you expand the rosters to add another player, then there's a 25th All-Star. And I'm not clutching my pearls about, hey, there's 24 All-Stars. There should be 24. When every year there's always injury replacements, which, again, it all comes back to this league has changed so dramatically in the past decade that I when people are like, oh, bring back East-West, I'm like, no, that cure is not. You know, there is not fixing the disease, which is player availability, player empowerment, and the fact that there's social media now that we just don't have the same novelty of the All-Star game, that we have access to all of these superstars on the regular basis. And so I just think that we're going to try something new this year, and hopefully we get a little bit more competition. But I think this is also to do with the marketing of the league, that we've got the Olympics coming up. It's on NBC.
Yes.
And I think they want to have a branch, a little bridge to the Olympics coverage of NBC. And I get that. Hockey, NHL had huge success with this last year. NBA is kind of coming on the tail of that and saying, let's try this for the NBA. I am cautiously optimistic that this will be interesting. This will be fun. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right to point to that. Was it? I think the Four Nations Face-Off was the name of that sort of mini tournament that the NHL did that got people really excited about that. I think it'll be a little bit more difficult to totally replicate that, because it's not like you're going to say, you know, here's Team France, here's Team Cameroon, here's Team whatever. Although I would love that. That'd be pretty rad. I don't know that you can fill out the rosters quite the same way as you could with the NHL. But the idea being, like, I don't know if you can force motivation in the same way that Adam Silver has tried and the front office, the league office has tried in a variety of different iterations over the last handful of years. Maybe this tweak, maybe the Elam ending, maybe, mini tournament, maybe the Rising Stars go into it, maybe, you know, all these sorts of tweaks and adjustments to it. Maybe it's, you know, go back to wearing these sorts of uniforms. Maybe it's, you know, like all different sorts of gimmickry. And none of it has really led to much more in the way of consistent competition. Maybe national pride is a button you could push. It feels a little bit like a fraught button to push, to be honest with you, at this moment. But I think it's interesting. I think also the fact that Team World is going to be just like everybody's MVP ballot, and then the other all NBA first team and second team. Like, that's interesting. And what does Team USA look like around that? Especially if we're looking at a world where it's not, you know, LeBron James and Jason Tatum or whatever. I mean, although your third eye might wind up being open if LeBron doesn't play enough games or whatever, but we need one more US guy on, and maybe LeBron will play. I think it's all as we've talked about with a lot of these sorts of issues, like, and you mentioned the demands, the physical demands of the NBA as it exists right now. Players have to cover more of the court faster, and the interactions and the athleticism that's required to do it are greater today. The strain is greater today than it has been at any point in NBA history. And the answer to how to better minimize player injury or concern or whatever is fewer games. Right. Well, that's not going to happen because everybody wants the 82 game checks and the 82 gate receipts. And so that's why we're not doing that.
Yep.
The better answer for what the players might need, what provides the best product here might be just like, give everybody a week off. But this is a marketing tool.
Money.
Yeah.
Money.
And like,
can you do that?
And yeah, I mean, this is you know, what did Draymond Green say in the aftermath of the FBI indictments coming down? It was like, I don't hear anybody complaining about the pie growing, you know, no one seems to be too mad about the size of the pie continuing to get bigger, wherever the pots of money come from. This is the $76 billion broadcast rights deal. It is the league partner taking over and saying, we're going to infuse attention and energy into this. We got to figure out how to make it happen. Also, this is basically a trade convention for our league. And it's like partner activations and sponsorships, which players will often talk about as part of the reason that you aren't really ready to give it your all by Sunday night, is like, you've been doing a billion different things for your brand partners on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And so like, by the time you get to Sunday night, it's kind of like, yeah, let's just, you know, go through the paces a little bit. Whether they're, and then, you know, they've tried upping like prize pools for it and saying like the winning team gets X amount of money per, you know, like, I don't know. I think you might be right that this is all a league office and a power structure searching for an answer to a problem that might not have an answer in our current league construct, media environment. Their scarcity of being able to see this player versus that player is gone. The ease of being able to access all of, like, not even just highlights, like every possession that guy ran, you can do now in a way that you were not able to at different points, where there was more mystique and intrigue around these players being on the same floor at the same time. Even things like which of these guys would be a play down the stretch, right? It's like Bill Simmons always used to sort of talk about that. Like, this is your shorthand for who matters the most. If it's the last 5 minutes of a tight All-Star game, who's on the floor and who's watching? Well, but now you see all of these guys are also playing internationally. And so you see most of those guys in like the medal rounds of Eurobasket or in the Olympics or whatever. And like, obviously, eyeballs are different for the NBA All-Star game than it is the other parts. But like, it's easier to see all of it. It's harder to make it all feel special. It's harder to, with a straight face, tell all the players, you have to treat this like it's game 7 of the NBA Finals. And then I think it all leads you with like, well, how do we dress it up in a different way? I'm skeptical that it's going to result in dramatically higher levels of competition, but national pride is again, maybe a worthwhile lever to pull here. And I think the downside risk on the other side of it is like, if the world team absolutely destroys both USA teams, and then we wake up that, you know, Monday morning and it's like, American basketball is dead. It's like, is that the news cycle you really want to work on either? But we'll see.
I think NBC would love that. I think the idea of the revenge tour from LeBron and Steph coming up in the Olympics, and they're like, finally, you know what? We got to avenge the 2025-26 All-Star game. All-Star game. The world. One tweak I feel like we should have done, but I understand why they did it. Didn't do this. Just make it World versus Team USA. Two teams. Don't introduce a third team, because then we're going to split the Americans into two different teams. So you're not going to get a true like USA versus the world. Like, you're telling me if we got like let's just like paint this picture. You've got Jokic, Giannis, Big Vic, Şengün, and I mean, we can say Şengün. Like, you put Pascal Siakam out there as the fifth.
SGA.
and you're going to beat that team with your best? I'm watching that. But if it's like the diluted American team that's split halfway down the middle and they're going against that, I'm less intrigued. But if it's our best versus their best, I'm actually absolutely watching that. So I kind of hope that they, in the What?
But my question, Tom, is if you just have one regular game and you don't split it up into two separate segments, how do you get Kevin Hart's bit and Mr. Beast's bit in? Like, where do they fit in the broadcast structure? You know, like, so we got to think about the activations.
Like, Drewski has to have a 5-minute bit that he has to do, you know?
Well, I'm seated for that, of course. You know, I'm a big fan of all Drewski's content. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just you're trying to serve all partners and masters here, and eventually, you know, it's a blanket that's not going to cover everybody, and somebody's going to get left out in the cold on it. Do you care about the fact that it's all positionless now? I mean, is that something that's interesting to you? Do you feel like revenge, you know, no. The big men have now revenged themselves to the point where they're going to be there no matter what? You know, the concerns of yesteryear are gone.
Don't care. I think the real move, honestly, if you want to make this interesting and have the players care about it, is not Team USA versus World. It's regions of America going against each other. I feel like if you got the Pacific Northwest going against New York, New Jersey, tri-state area, you would get some actual pride. If you had the DC, like you had Kevin Durant leading the Baltimore, DC metro area versus LA, you would get some serious, serious pride going. LA sure. Versus New York, Pacific Northwest versus like Midwest, like Northeast Ohio area. Like, what team does Steph play for? Is he Charlotte? Is he North Carolina with Bam Adebayo? Or is he kind of going back home to where he was born in the same hospital as LeBron James, which is one of the most crazy stories in the NBA? That LeBron James and Steph Curry were born in the same hospital in Akron, Ohio. I feel like that, now that is something I think they would get up for, is like home pride, like home pride. Damn.
Again, we're really leaning hard into like, how do we stoke tribal fury? And I have a little bit of concern about that. But I do hear the argument. I hear what you're saying. And it's like, well, right. But if you're not playing for... If increasing the amount of money you make from it is not doing anything, if just the like entreaty to, you know, make Michael Jordan proud or whatever isn't doing it, if there's not going to be any kind of like you get a first round bye in the playoffs or whatever associated with it, like, yeah, what's going to motivate guys? And yeah, maybe repping the hometown is part of it. I don't know. We'll see. I think you brought up the idea of cautious optimism. NBC is broadcasting the game. NBC is presenting this. It is their first sort of maiden voyage back into this sort of national showcase. And so far, pretty so good on pretty much everything NBC has and Peacock and their presentation has put together. And I think we've seen a real like celebration of the game and something that's, you know, been exciting to tune into. So fingers crossed, you know, hope springs eternal. We'll see if this provides similar sort of a breath of fresh air and new life into what has become a fairly stale situation, no matter how many different iterations we've seen of it in the last handful of years.
Yeah, I'm with you. Might as well try it. We'll see. Maybe we'll be, I don't know. Are you going to All-Star? I haven't been in All-Star in a few years. So
hey, if my kids are listening, earmuff it for me real quick. We're going to Disney over the All-Star break. So they don't know that yet. But unless I'm forced to change my travel plans, which, bosses, if you could earmuff it for me, I really don't want to do. Then I don't anticipate being an All-Star this year.
Be a good father, okay? And take them. Well, hey, Disneyland, two birds, one stone, Intuit Dome. Could do that. You know? I didn't mean to put it out there.
It's all right, Tom. Yeah. Non-refundable deposits mean that we will not be changing that, making those adjustments, but I hear where you're coming from. But yeah, I mean, listen, yeah, it's... There's a possibility that it could be a ton of fun, and we'll see.
I'm taking it all back. I'm sorry, Dad, to put you through that pain of having entice that idea, that concept. Dan, this was a lot of fun. I don't think we solved the Nico mess or All-Star, but we certainly tried, right? I want to thank everybody for listening today, watching us. Thanks to Emmy and Sarah and the entire team that works so hard behind the scenes on this show. Please make the big number a subscribe show for you. Hit that subscription button on YouTube. Subscribe to the big number wherever you listen to podcasts. give us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. Until then.